is knowing. Crow!
All right, man. Welcome to Crow 777 Radio, this is hour one of episode 607. It's me and Jason. We are going to be talking about Notre Dame, and I would urge everyone to go back on the episodes we have done about the cathedrals. As fate would have it, some years ago, I was very interested in The Mystery of the Cathedrals, the book by Falconelli, and I was noticing that for a long time now, they've been erasing the information that was encoded into those buildings. And in that episode, I said things like, hold on to the images or anything you have relating to these edifices, these magnificent structures, because they're erasing parts of them. And lo and behold, 30 days after we aired the episode, the mysterious fire that no one can possibly figure out how it happened burned up part of Notre Dame. This is a bit much to take in the era of when you see a fire somewhere and they go in to investigate for insurance. I mean, they very rarely come up with, we have no idea. They find where it happened, what caused it, and everything else. But I'll step that aside. Welcome, Jason.
And a very cool good morning.
All right. Anything you want to say about a past episode or Notre Dame, or shall we just jump in?
We were speaking about the last time we really got into the cathedrals and thinking about how different we approach things now.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And not only have we learned a lot, we probably some time ago realized that just everything's connected. There is a common thread through all of the things that are happening in the world right now that most people don't appreciate. Even some of the people involved in it don't appreciate it at this point. It's a bloodline or a groups of bloodlines, but that's a tale for another episode.
All right, here we go. AP News, December 7th, 2024. The famed Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris reopens to great fanfare. Notre Dame is reopening its doors for the first time since a fire in 2019 nearly destroyed Paris's beloved 12th century cathedral. World leaders, including President-elect Donald Trump, America's First Lady Jill Biden, Britain's Prince William, and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, gathered Saturday among more than 2,500 guests to celebrate the restoration of the landmark, widely considered to be a pinnacle of French architectural heritage. Saturday's events started with Archbishop Laurent Ulrich symbolically reopening Notre Dame's grand wooden doors with three resounding knocks. Following the 2019 fire, nearly $1 billion in donations poured in from around the world, a tribute to its worldwide appeal.
Yeah, it's more important than world hunger, and I'm being kind of blunt. Maybe I shouldn't say that, but my point here is that as far as I can tell in this world, since the time of the supposed building of the cathedrals, which I have a problem with the timeline, I think the majority of them, the ones that are really, really just mind-boggling, like Notre Dame, were built in what Falconelli calls the Middle Ages, which the church and history likes to call the Dark Ages. And I'll ask a simple question. If those ages were dark and rightly labeled dark, how could something like this ever have been built? To me, these are the pinnacle of, I mean, I can't say modern, but I think people are getting it. You know, what do we build now? Boxes and rectangles. And from the old occulted information that we're all aware of now, these are the angles of sorrow. And when you compare what we build now to that, there's really no comparison. But I do what I always do. I do a quick cursory look at the dates. And of course, the date can be 9/11. Am I saying that they picked the date for this? I am absolutely not. But what I am saying is it is astonishing the number of dates that will resolve to 9/11 that have to do with things we know are put up. In this case, the 2024 plus 12 ends up being an 11. The 11 plus 7 equals 9, and a 2 and a 9 is always going to be 11. There's a couple different ways you can do it. And again, I'm not saying that choices are made based on this, but I am saying the wheel of time often lines up with this. And I will say they picked 9/11 for that reason, certainly. We know this because we can go back through media. Now, the question that I have is when you have a landmark of this significant importance, and there are a few others that rise to this level, why would you ever change anything? And Jason, I don't, did they end up doing the 6 new stained glass windows? Do you know?
Some of them had to be repaired and some of them had to be replaced.
So this is one of the things. Back in the day, they were touted. The colors in these windows are amazing. We can't replicate them because we don't know the alchemical truths of nature that were employed to get them. But if anyone reads Falconelli, and I say everyone should, it is not an easy read. It is encoded language. Some of it's double speak, double entendre. But he tells you flat out that these windows, three of them were designed based on the light that was going to come through them. One of them is not in direct sunlight, but the all-important Western one catching the setting sun, he flat out tells you that even the colors were encoded with significance and meaning. And here we have a back and forth over what's going to become of six new windows, which is the light. I mean, don't get this wrong. Those windows let the light in. Which is significant, but they're arguing about whether it's going to be modern art or whether they're going to honor the old way. They keep saying that there are people that demand that the 1844 renovation is honored, but what I found is even the 1844 renovation is losing track of what came before. And then you have quotes like this: the current chief of Paris prosecutor, Laurie, whatever it is, Bacow maybe, said in April, "The closer we have got to the spot of the fire and where it started, the more results of analysis come back, the more weight is lent to the theory that we don't know, but it was probably an accident." I mean, what more do we need to say here, Jason?
Notre Dame de Paris, often referred to simply as Notre Dame, is a medieval Catholic cathedral that is on the Île de la Cité, an island on the River Seine, in the 4th arrondissement of Paris, France. The cathedral, which was dedicated in honor of the Virgin Mary, is considered one of the finest examples of French Gothic architecture. Several attributes set it apart from the earlier Romanesque style, which includes its pioneering use of the rib vault and flying buttress, its enormous and colorful rose windows, and the naturalism and abundance of its sculptural decoration. Notre Dame is also exceptional for its three pipe organs, one of which is historic, and its immense church bells. Construction began in the year 1163 on Île de la Cité. The cornerstone was laid by Pope Alexander III in the presence of King Louis VII. Construction is under the guidance of Bishop Maurice de Sully. The cathedral is largely completed by 1345, with the major construction phases concluding in 1430, with the North Tower being completed. Many modifications and additions would be made over the following centuries, however. Notre Dame is one of the oldest and most well-known cathedrals in the world.
I don't know about you, Jason, but I have always had a problem with the church's claim. Like, show us the blueprints, tell us the name of the architect, and these kinds of things. When you read Falconelli's The Mystery of the Cathedral, I get the sense that he's, without right saying it, that the church is sticking its nose in and that this was going on well before they had the control we're familiar with. What is certain from this text and other things is that there has been a concerted effort to remove the symbols and information in those cathedrals. And again, if you don't read that book, you will have no idea of the absolute scope of information that was originally put in. I mean, if there is a carving or a piece of art, it's holding information. And Falconelli does a bang-up job of showing that that's true. The one example that I always use is one that Falconelli puts forward about the story of St. Christopher, which was one of the first things you saw as you were forced to walk in facing the rising sun or the light, where, in other words, we're walking into illumination. But this St. Christopher was holding a baby Jesus, apparently, somehow associated with Mercury. It was colored as such, but I think it was a pope, I'm not sure, it was the church that for some reason directed them, this has to go. It was a bishop, I believe, don't know his name, but it's in the book. Anyone can cross-reference what I'm saying if I make a mistake. The bishop says, over my dead body, they do exactly that. They wait for him to die, and they grab that statue, and apparently there were other buildings like this encoding information that had the St. Christopher up front as a starting point, I would imagine. They drug it out back, and they didn't just bury it. They smashed it to bits. Falconelli, on I think at least two occasions that I can recall, said that the information is lost and it's unretrievable.
The period of the years 1789 to 1793 was a time of turmoil for Notre Dame due to the tumult of the French Revolution, which significantly impacted both the religious and cultural landscape of France. July 14, 1789 sees the storming of the Bastille, which marks the beginning of the French Revolution. This event sets the stage for widespread anti-clerical sentiment and actions against religious institutions, which included Notre Dame. In the autumn of that same year, the National Assembly begins the process of nationalizing church property. This leads to changes in the management and function of Notre Dame. 1790 sees the civil constitution of the clergy. This decree requires clergy to take an oath of loyalty to the civil constitution, which causes a schism within the French Catholic Church. Many priests would refuse to swear the oath, which led to the secularization of church properties. The cathedral sees a decline in its religious activities as its role in society begins to shift.
So the way this story is told is kind of misleading. What I gather from the various sources that talk about this, however accurate they are, is for some reason people had had it with the church. They keep saying the word clergy. Why don't you just say what you mean, right? Am I wrong in associating the church here? According to Falconelli's readings or writings, I don't think I am. Well, why were they fed up with the church? My best guess is because people could still remember a better time when that kind of power was not taking over anything. In some of the writings, you'll realize that this particular cathedral seemed to be the heart center, spirit center, and maybe even brain center where healing went on. And it wasn't just healing like I'm hurt, okay, thanks, I'm going. Like they would stay there until they were all the way fixed. Among other sources, Falconelli is one of the best to show how many non-religious oriented, well, I don't want to say societies, guilds maybe is a better word, to include the sick and the injured came to this place to use it, which again points to this came from a time before the Vatican had the power that it had accumulated. And again, why are we told in history that this is the Dark Age when we can see buildings like this that clearly demonstrate there's nothing dark about the individuals living in this time who could manage such an incredible feat? And lastly, this period of time that we're talking about, to me, starts to shape up to be the real dividing line between the older world and the takeover that is now in full fever pitch. I'm writing notes on an episode that I hope will come out before too long that kind of points to Napoleon's lifetime as being that big gathering of power. And even the Battle of Waterloo, most people are familiar with the tales about the stock exchange being taken over based on a lie. Anyhow, I'll try to stick to the points at hand here, Jason.
By the church, you mean the Catholic Church, of course, and not just Christianity in general, because at this point in time, Protestantism is around.
It is, but it seems to me that the church has made the claim and, as far as I know, exerted the most control over things. So when I say the church here, I do mean the Catholic Church. Am I skewed a little bit by Falconelli? Absolutely, because he flat out states that an order comes as the example to remove the Saint Christopher. Why would anyone do that? You know, is that statue harming someone? What's going on here from my point of view is you have one of the most magnificent buildings ever built in an era that we're aware of that encoded a path based on natural science, someone might say alchemy, where nature holds all the truth. And it shows a human being how to spiritually get to a higher state of being. And from my point of view, that was a threat to the church. The church wanted the power. Nobody gets anywhere unless they come through the Pope kind of idea.
Shifts continue in France when the Constitution of 1791 is ratified, which further entrenches the changes to the church's role within the state. This includes the election of bishops and priests by the public rather than them being appointed by the Pope. The cathedral's treasures are also inventoried and some are requisitioned for the state. This, of course, reduced its material wealth. September of 1792 sees the September massacres playing out, where many priests and aristocrats are killed. This heightens the atmosphere of fear and anti-clericalism. In November of that same year, the monarchy is abolished, which transforms France into a republic. This further accelerates the secularization of the state. In September of 1793, the Reign of Terror begins under Robespierre's Committee of Public Safety, with a peak in anti-clericalism.
Wow, what is it about September and bad things happening? Well, nature doesn't tell any lies. This is the fall, right? This is the sun going down. And while I'll kind of set that aside again, why is there all this anti-church mindset? Well, for one thing, we're told that people were starving to death and the aristocrats were living high on the hog. But as a result of what happens here, there's very few people that are saying, oh, this is all good. This is going to be a good time. Apparently, it was a horror show, all that went on. But this period of time relates to the Renaissance. Falconelli does talk about it, but for a long time, I have viewed, based on what I know about the Medicis and the things that I've learned, the Renaissance was a big change in the older way, where the truths of nature rang true, apparently, for cultures gone by. What the Medicis did was they used art as propaganda, and the real switch is instead of the art and what the art is informing us being the important part, they're making rock stars out of the artists who create it. A lot of the art is being replicated from a time before where they're saying things like, wow, the master's back in this unknown time that we don't know a lot about. We're creating art at a level that we can't even touch. And yet we're looking at those replicated efforts saying that is the pinnacle when they themselves are saying this is not the pinnacle. This time gone by is the pinnacle. The problem is that the message is being lost in the art. And so presumably there was a time when people saw the Three Fates or some other art where the message was being communicated. Now we're entering into hypermaterialism. And that has plagued us all the way to the modern age, because a big part of the control mechanisms and getting us to agree into things we shouldn't, like cell phones, is due to materialism and convenience. But I'll stop there, Jason. Go ahead.
While the revolution was still going on, several statues at Notre Dame were beheaded. Above the main portals on the west facade of Notre Dame, there's a row of statues known as the Gallery of Kings. These statues represent the 28 kings of Judah, who are supposed to be ancestors of Mary and thus of Jesus Christ in the Christian tradition. These statues were mistakenly identified by the revolutionaries as French kings. This was supposed to have occurred in October of 1793, following the execution of Marie Antoinette. A mob, who were driven by the revolutionary fervor against monarchy as well as religion, used ropes to pull down these statues, which they mistakenly believed represented French kings. They guillotined these statues in the square in front of the cathedral, mirroring the human executions that were going on. In 1977, the heads of 21 out of these 28 statues were found during construction work in the courtyard of a private mansion at 20 Rue de la Chaussée d'Antin. These heads had been carefully preserved, having been buried in plaster since the time of the revolution. The discovery was made when there was an enlargement of the basement of what is now the French Bank of Foreign Trade. The original heads are now housed in the Musée de Cluny, National Museum of the Middle Ages in Paris.
All right, do you see the problem by omission here? Okay, there were these statues representing things from the Old Testament in the Bible. But unfortunately, people thought they were the kings they were revolting against, so they drug them out back and cut them down. Okay, so you recovered the head, so who were they? Why aren't you telling us who they were? To me, this smacks of an example where no emergency goes to waste, and this is probably just more of the erasing of the critical information. Was it in fact about kings of Judah, or was it one of the pagan elements or so-called pagan elements that Falconelli talks about? And by the way, when I say pagan, it is not a slight. All these elements that are called pagan made it well within to Christianity. Why? Because nature tells the truth, and these are homilies and metaphors and personification of elements of nature. It really has nothing to do with being anti-church or otherwise. So what's the truth here? Is information being erased here, or did they recover it and we can all go know exactly what it was because we have the heads and otherwise? for my money, it really sounds like there was an emergency going on, so someone took the opportunity to destroy a little more of the information that was on display.
Apart from the beheading of the Gallery of Kings, other statues, particularly those that were considered idolatrous or royalist, were either destroyed or removed from the cathedral. Many of Notre Dame's religious relics and treasures were either sold, melted down, or otherwise disposed of. The cathedral was said to have been ransacked. Many of its furnishings, including altars, were either dismantled or destroyed. The cathedral's rich iconography, including stained glass and paintings, were targeted. Some stained glass was removed or damaged, although, thankfully, not all was destroyed. The lead that lined the cathedral's roof was stripped to be used for making bullets, and some of the cathedral's bells were melted down to make cannons. The largest bell, Emmanuel, was spared, although it is uncertain as to why its size may have played a part in that decision. The lack of maintenance during this period led to further physical degradation of the building, which was already suffering from centuries of wear.
It's crazy to imagine that an edifice like this could be in a major city and is just allowed to start to go to ruin. But am I wrong in saying it looks to me like this is more of removing information? Well, we have a direct relatable experience, which is written down with the St. Christopher debacle. What did they do? Someone gave an order, get rid of this. Why? They don't tell us, but it's pretty clear, to remove information. And they destroy it so that it can't be found. That's why I make the claim against these other statues, because we already have the example. Is it a case of no emergency goes to waste? For my money, in the modern era, I cannot think of a time when there's been an actual emergency where our news and politicians haven't jumped in to use it to their benefit in some way. And so I think we have examples of it, and this is probably one of the many things in the mysteries of the cathedrals where we're told basically what was there was lost forever. There are exceptions because of drawings and other things, but I imagine, and I am imagining, I am guessing that there's got to be information somewhere where people back in the day recognized how important this was and preserved blueprints or, you know, did drawings on what was there, maybe in the basement of the Vatican. In other words, I am hopeful that someday in a saner time, maybe what was originally put there will begin to come to light.
On November 10th, 1793, the cathedral is transformed into a Temple of Reason, which celebrates the Cult of Reason. This is an attempt to replace Catholic religion with a secular, rationalist faith. A Festival of Reason is then held with a Goddess of Liberty installed on the altar. After the brief period as a temple, Notre Dame is used for various secular purposes. This includes being used as a storage space for food items, reflecting the utilitarian approach to former church buildings during this period. Over time, without regular maintenance, the cathedral begins to show signs of neglect, with damage both to its structure and its decorations. This period would mark one of the lowest points in Notre Dame's history, with the cathedral having been stripped of much of its religious significance and subjected to physical degradation. However, the revolutionary fervor would eventually subside. With the rise of Napoleon, who would have his coronation in the cathedral in 1804, which would significantly increase the prestige of the cathedral, Notre Dame would begin a slow but steady journey back to being one of the central cathedrals of France.
Boy, they apparently really didn't appreciate the Vatican's power, I would say, Jason. And you see this today. Go look at movies that cover Notre Dame, even the Disney thing, which incidentally I worked on as a stagehand, but I've never seen the movie. They're always the villain, aren't they? But again, we're all the way up into the 1800s now, and there's still a concerted backlash against whatever the church was involved in, and all the way up into modern times, they are made the villains in the retellings around this cathedral. But again, I would stake that the Napoleon lifetime is really where the dark side of the banking force put down its stakes and started to make a real power grab on everything they could.
By the end of the 18th century, Notre Dame was very much in a state of advanced disrepair. The damage that was caused during the French Revolution is said to have left the building almost unrecognizable. The cathedral was no longer used as a place of worship, and many observers of the time were even suggesting that it be demolished. It was then that Victor Hugo's work, Notre Dame de Paris, which was published in the year 1831, played a decisive role. This novel was a true plea for the preservation of historical monuments and raised public and governmental awareness of the need to restore the cathedral. Victor Hugo denounced the state of decay of the building, which he viewed as a symbol of medieval grandeur. His work spurred a national mobilization, which prompted the French government to launch a large-scale restoration program. This led to the architect Viollet-le-Duc and his vision for Notre Dame.
It's incredible to think that we can see what's there now and be so moved by it. Unfortunate what they did after the fire. It's kind of like they sterilized that place. But to get back to the point, this is going on in 1831, and Falconelli doesn't write until the early 20s. I think it's the 1920s. Also, if I'm not mistaken, Falconelli writes something else, but I don't think it was published. Maybe it has been by then, but I think at the time it was supposedly held back because the world wasn't ready or something to be published. But are there writings that would match the level of what Falconelli gave us from an earlier time? Because let's face it, based on what we can look at here, so much has been lost that they say it's almost unrecognizable to what it originally was.
The architect, Eugène Viollet-le-Duc, was a fervent advocate of Gothic architecture. With that in mind, rather than simply restoring the cathedral to its original state, Viollet-le-Duc desired to give Notre Dame architectural unity by reinterpreting some of its missing parts. He made numerous additions and worked on reconstructing the statues of the Gallery of Kings, restoring the flying buttresses and stained glass windows, and recreating the gargoyles. These are fantastic figures that serve both as waterspouts as well as symbols of protection. Although controversial at the time for what was considered his sometimes bold additions, the restorations that he performed saved the cathedral from abandonment and, most likely, eventual demolition.
So these gargoyles become main characters in the modern telling of the Hunchback of Notre Dame, don't they? And so if they are recreations and if they are not close to whatever was originally there, you can see that not only the building has changed, but the way that we remember it or think about it has changed. But to show the level of misdirection associated with the old world, just grab Mystery of the Cathedral and look up the word Gothic, because basically Falconelli says, I'm in the know, and the word Gothic doesn't mean what you think it does.
The three spires of Notre Dame. The original spire was built between the years 1220 and 1230. It was made of oak and was positioned above the crossing of the transept, which symbolized a connection between earth and heaven. This first spire was a simpler design compared to its successors, focusing on functionality while still embodying Gothic architectural principles. It was supported by a well-designed framework that distributed its weight across the transept's pillars. Between 1786 and 1792, this first spire was removed due to its structural instability and decay. It had become unsafe as it had started to lean while deteriorating over the centuries.
All right, so there's a problem back then. Things are going to get rebuilt, but here's the thing that most people don't think about. Is there an occulted importance symbology going on with the spires? And I think most people could work out what it symbolizes. It's the connection between earth and heaven, isn't it? And that's what we're talking about here, and that's what later gets burned down. And there are too many coincidences. Well, we'll get there. Let's keep moving, Jason.
During the extensive 19th century restoration of Notre Dame that was led by the aforementioned Eugène Viollet-le-Duc, a second spire was constructed in 1859. This one was more ornate and was emblematic of the neo-Gothic revival. Viollet-le-Duc's spire was taller and more decorative than the original had been and reached approximately 315 feet high. The second spire featured statues of the 12 apostles around its base with a copper rooster at the top. The rooster contained three Christian relics. The first relic was a small piece of what was supposed to be from the original crown of thorns that had been placed upon Jesus' head before the crucifixion. The second and third items were a relic of St. Denis and a relic of St. Genevieve, who is the patron saint of Paris. The piece of the crown of thorns was supposed to have been put into the rooster by Viollet-le-Duc himself in the year 1860. This new spire became an iconic part of Notre Dame's silhouette until its dramatic destruction in the fire on April 15, 2019. When the spire had collapsed, the rooster was thought to have been lost. However, it was found intact along with the relics contained within.
So many things we could say here, but I'll say it again. Why recreate and argue about, why not recreate the original? Why are we arguing about whether this should be different? And to me, that one fact that happens over and over again when they go to clean it up or repair things shows the intent to not respect what everybody knows is an important message in these buildings. And even if you didn't, the respect for a period of time when human beings could create something at this level. I think what a lot of people overlook is the symbology and even just that rooster. Roosters are among the most electric animals. And that's why when the sun comes up, they cock-a-doodle-doo. The sun is an electromagnetic body, and this is heavily symbolic in secret societies. I would urge people to go check out the work of Hoaxbuster, who does maybe the best job of breaking this down. But even when we did our No Nukes episode, and I was doing that, the year was the rooster, again, tying it back to this symbology. But these things are not just ornamental. They had information. They were used for a reason because they communicated something. And again, why do they continually say, well, let's put modern art in here? To me, that's not an innocent argument. To me, that is intentionally wanting to move away from what was there previously.
After the 2019 fire, plans were made to rebuild the spire, which aimed to replicate Viollet-le-Duc's 19th century design as closely as possible. Construction on the new spire began in earnest in 2022 with a focus on authenticity, choosing to use traditional craftsmanship and materials like oak for the structure and lead for the exterior covering. The new spire was completed along with the installation of a new copper rooster at its summit in December of 2023, with it being unveiled to the public in February of 2024. This third spire not only restores the iconic look of Notre Dame, but also is said to symbolize the cathedral's resilience and the commitment to preserving its historical form. The rebuilding and presentation of the third spire has been a point of national pride in France and has garnered international attention, highlighting the worldwide significance of the Notre Dame Cathedral as a cultural and historical monument. These three spires of Notre Dame can be said to tell a story of destruction, restoration, and rebirth, encapsulating the cathedral's enduring legacy through the centuries.
Okay, how about this? Let me try to make the point of the amount of information that could simply be held in knowing that there's a rooster that's made out of copper. So here, check this. Copper is an important component in several enzymes involved in energy production, metabolism, your neuroactivation, pigmentation, connective tissues, their neurotransmitters, has to do with your immune systems, on and on it goes. But the element has close ties to gender, that gender being female. And as we know, Notre Dame is basically the Lady of the North, or something close to that is a feminine. Copper is also crucial when it comes to the development of the fetus in a womb. Where did they put that stuff? They put it inside, although a rooster is male. A healthy infant has up to 4 times the concentration of copper when born compared to a fully grown human. The only reason I'm reading these things off is because a person who's been informed about what a symbol means and the information contained in it, it can really get pretty involved, the amount of info that's being, you know, handed back. The original symbol for Venus is copper, and it comes from the Egyptian symbol of the Ankh. Fulcanelli and others flat out show that an Ankh is about an energy symbol, and it lays out on the floor plan of Notre Dame. And this is, as he's saying, it was not originally a church. There's so much more I could go into just with the fact that there was a copper rooster. And I think it's important to state this just so people recognize that I could write 5 paragraphs and maybe not communicate as I can with showing one symbol that I know something about used in a certain way.
In 1862, Notre Dame was officially classified as a historical monument by the French government. This classification was part of a broader movement in France to protect their cultural heritage. This was spurred by the Romantic movement's appreciation for medieval architecture and history, which had been rekindled by works like Victor Hugo's The Hunchback of Notre Dame that had been published in 1831. The impact of this novel was still resonating in 1862, which contributed to the public's as well as the government's interest in preserving and restoring Notre Dame. The novel had not only popularized the cathedral itself, but also led to a broader appreciation for Gothic architecture. By 1862, Notre Dame was increasingly seen as a national treasure, which influenced its preservation and the ongoing restoration efforts.
Well, I would say that the impact of that novel is still resonating into the 20th century, because when I was a roadie, I was a freelance roadie, and I was hired, I think, by Disney. I don't know if it was directly Disney, but it probably was, to go up to Burbank and create these like replicas of the facade of Notre Dame, which were going to go out and advertise that their movie, their animated movie, The Hunchback, was coming out. And this was going to go to all the malls all over America and all these other places. And I have not seen the film to this day. I was told it was not very good. Did you see the Disney animation film, Jason, by any chance? Hunchback, the recent one?
I did way back when, because it's been out for quite some time.
Well, what I wanted to say is I would almost be willing to bet that there's a pre-reference to the fire, but I don't know that for sure. But I would expect that it's quite possible there is. So if I ever did take the time to sit down and watch it, I would be looking. And for those of you who grew up with it or you're well aware of the movie, maybe you can answer in comments if there was any symbolism to that end. But the changes that were made more recently, based on the changes that were made a little further back, which were different, far different from the original, become main characters in what we remember about the edifice today. And this really does start to show the power of information exchange, media, movies, and books. For one thing, we're being told a book is the reason this thing was preserved. And then as we follow it up through time, that book ends up being the reason Disney makes a movie called Hunchback. And that movie ends up being what we all actually remember about this semi-ancient edifice, which was so critically imbued with valuable natural information.
Another aspect of Notre Dame that has become lost to time, and many may not even be aware had ever existed, are the original steps that the cathedral sat above. From the book, The Mystery of the Cathedrals by Fulcanelli, the majestic Notre Dame of Paris was formerly raised up on a flight of 11 steps, separated only by a narrow space from the wooden houses. From the pointed crow's step gables, it gained in boldness and elegance what it lost in bulk. Today, thanks to clearances, it appears all the more massive for being more isolated and because its porches, pillars, and buttresses rest directly on the ground. A gradual raising of the ground level all around has meant that the cathedral steps have been swallowed up one by one until none remains.
Okay, there's a few things. Anyone can do a brief lookup, and it's quite fascinating. As a matter of fact, Nova did a big thing on Notre Dame a few years ago, and it's I have real issues. They're pushing points of view and tying it as closely as they can to the church, the Vatican, to be clear. But this is a lesson that everyone already knows, but they should keep in mind. As time goes on, the past gets buried. We know this is true. And here's another example of this. But very few people don't know about these cathedrals, as many of them have been described as there's as much cathedral underground as there is above ground. Many of these edifices were built over an underground water source. And to top it off, many of them had a water source up near the round part, like if you laid an ankh down on the floor plan, up near the circle of the ankh, there would be this, I don't even know what it's called, basically a pool of water. But now consider that that idea has been expressed very recently by the book Dune, which now has a version that I think is probably wholly made up and referencing the book, but it's all about the Bene Gesserit's beginnings. It's called, is it Dune Prophecy? I don't know. It's on HBO. So I took time to watch some of it. One of the opening things they show you is all the sisters gathered around such a pool, and they demonstrate in your face that it is cymatic. They show the cymatic powers coming through the water and the sisters tapping into that. All of this was associated with this building and others. And how much have you ever heard about what's beneath that cathedral? Because if this is one of the cathedrals where there is vast amounts of it below what we see, it makes you wonder. But again, the 11 steps are buried, and it's not because some big cataclysm happened. It's because time marches on.
There's also the notion that Notre Dame is built on an area where there are telluric currents, but I had a very hard time trying to find any information on how to prove such a thing.
Jason, I had a very difficult time trying to find anyone who had a problem with the new launch. Search engines have become so overwhelmingly restrictive that it is near impossible to gain anywhere near the same quality of information that I can glean from books. But as we all know, if I want to get it from a book, it's going to take a lot more of my time. It's a real shame what has become of search engines. Very difficult to find those people who were critical of what's just happened with this cathedral. So I'm with you.
Folconelli discusses Notre Dame as an alchemical book in stone, which suggests that the cathedral's architecture and iconography encode alchemical teachings. He interprets various elements like the rose windows, the gargoyles, and the overall structure as allegories for alchemical processes and principles. Folconelli also places significance on the number 11, noting Notre Dame being connected to the surrounding buildings by the aforementioned 11 steps. In alchemy, 11 is significant as it's derived from 6, creation, plus 5, man, symbolizing the union of the microcosm, man, with the macrocosm, universe.
And did you notice how there was no negative connotation in Folconelli's view of why 11 is important? That's not what we see now. Almost always we see the flip side of that coin. We live in duality. So there's always light and dark. But for some reason in our era, everyone goes to the dark side of the coin. But again, to consider a building made of such beauty and then these stained glass windows where the very colors were not just designed for the light to come through, but designed for the time of day, recognizing, as anyone who has looked into natural sciences and alchemy will recognize, that the morning sun is not the afternoon sun, is not the evening sun. There's a difference, and nature proves this difference, and you can prove this difference. Go into your herb garden in the morning and notice, what are the plants doing? Well, they've got little drops of dew on their leaves. Then what are they doing at the height of the power of the sun at noon? Well, they're doing something different. And then what are they doing in the evening? Well, these incredibly beautiful rose windows, which absolutely seem to be mimicking a cymatic pattern. So there's probably telling you something about a vibration level, almost certainly, have colors that are designed for the setting sun's light to come through, or the south facing. Anyhow, anyone can go read this. It is amazing. And then again, to recap, we apparently can't replicate many of these colors because we've lost the alchemical recipes and principles. Now, I want to make the point, every effort has been made to defame alchemy and like pagan ideas. Why is an idea bad if it's pagan, but if it's like historical Greek myth, it's not bad? It's the same thing. So you see what happens. To me, what makes a thing good or bad is how it's used. And the stupid knife thing that we always bring up, right? I got a knife. Well, I carved a beautiful statue, so that's good, right? Well, I hurt someone, so that's bad. This information is no different, except that when they're talking about all these important aspects of nature, this is where truth resides, and you can only do it one way. Either nature says, yes, you did it right, you can achieve, or no, you did it wrong, and this isn't going to work. And that is not evil on the face of it. When someone takes the information and does bad, that's the problem. So the idea that we should be afraid of this occulted, hidden information is patently ridiculous. Although I will say, a wise individual knows when to look away, because you can't unsee things. And I think we need to always keep that in our mind in the modern era.
Well, that brings us to the top of hour one. And when we come back for hour two, there's a good bit of alchemical symbolism we're going to demonstrate that is still actually in place in Notre Dame even today.
Yes. And again, go out and read. There are different versions of Mysteries of the Cathedrals. And the problem will be, is it's not like reading modern text. It's going to stretch your imagination. There's a lot of doublespeak. That's not the right word, but that is the modern word. And other things going on, which you clearly begin to realize if you're not initiated, you're not going to get everything there. But you see, the reason he wrote that is for someone who wants to seek, he's provided information to help you get there. That's part of it. Anyhow, that is hour one of episode 607. The new solar images are up for anybody. I'm about to add more. I'm going to put up the Shoot the Moon movie posters. And last night, the three of us got together and I have a gorgeous image of the moon that was shot with a full spectrum camera, where the dark side of the moon, not the side we don't see, but the blacked out side is what's visible because of the camera I used. And the lit side is just blown way out. It's really a stunning image that will shortly be available. Anyhow, hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. Members know to log in for the full episode. They get access to all the forums, comments, threads. They can create all those things. Plus, they can stream the two-hour film, Shoot the Moon, covering all my older telescope work, lunar wave, second sun, shooting orbs, so-called UFOs, anytime they want. And they get exclusive access to my current solar telescope work. With that, we're going to take a short break and come back for hour two. And I hope to see you all logged in as members. I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. Be back shortly. Cheers.
enemies of knowing.